Welcome to the Azure for Executives podcast, the show for technology leaders. This podcast covers trends in technologies and industries and how Microsoft Azure is enabling them. Here you'll hear from thought leaders in various industries and technologies on topics important to you. You'll also learn how to partner with Microsoft to enable your organization and your customers with Microsoft Azure. Welcome, listeners, to a show about the future of technology. And to talk us through with some of that is Dr. Mark Van Rijsmenum. And I know that I butchered that, sir, so maybe you can help me fix that. For the listeners, what's the right way to pronounce your name?
Hi, David. It's great to be in the show. And the right way to pronounce my name is Van Rijsmenum, which is even in Dutch a difficult name, so you're excused.
Well, I appreciate that. And you're known as the digital speaker. So Mark focuses on the future of work and how to build the organization of tomorrow using emerging tech. These things include big data analytics, blockchain, IoT, Internet of Things, something that we'll get into in a little bit, tokenomics, and of course, artificial intelligence, which is playing a big role in how things are evolving. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so I wonder if we could start off just by asking you to tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Sure, happy to do so. So I have been an entrepreneur for about a decade now, and I am the founder of Dataflock, which is an online content platform around emerging technologies, where we talk about big data, blockchain, AI, among others. I'm also the founder, co-founder of Maven, where we are building a reputation-based authentication protocol to sort of, you know, reward good behavior and assure reputation portability across the web. And I am a founding board member of the Two Tokens Foundation here in the Netherlands, which is building a roadmap around tokenization. And up till last year, I was flying around the world to help organizations with their digital transformation programs as a keynote speaker. But of course, due to COVID-19, I had to reinvent myself and hence the name the digital speaker. But I guess we'll come to that in a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really interesting topic, what you've done in response to COVID. So I'm looking forward to that piece of our conversation. But one thing is that you look at various technologies, their impact on business and society. This is sort of the main focus. So let's talk first about the technologies of today. What tech is having a large impact and changing today's paradigms?
Sure. Well, the technologies that I look at and that have my interest are big data, blockchain, and artificial intelligence. I've been writing about these topics for many years now. I've done my PhD on these topics, I find these topics these technologies so fascinating because they have such a massive impact on society, on organizations, and they are really changing how we run our business, how we run our organization, and so. From that perspective, you know, big data as well as analytics, Internet of Things, blockchain, AI, and we've been dealing with them for some 20 years, 30 years, and the other ones more recently, for example, blockchain. But we see that the impact these technologies have is enormous, and we're only at the starting point of how these technologies will impact organizations. And that's what I research is, how can we, you know, use these technologies for the benefit of our society, for the benefit of our organization, and to make them useful to us.
That's great. And those are certainly areas of interest and growth, particularly, you know, AI and blockchain. But one of the things you mentioned in a previous conversation with me is IoT, Internet of Things. And IoT is certainly mainstream these days. Microsoft's made a lot of investment in many areas of IoT, and various industrial scenarios are blooming beyond our typical predictive maintenance scenarios, which is valuable, but not where the industry's headed. I just want to mention, too, the role of 5G in mobile and maybe get your perspective on that, because I'll tell you that just recently my wife and I, we moved into a different home and it didn't have cable internet or didn't have internet at all, fiber or anything. So I went on to a 5G hotspot with a cellular carrier and it worked. It worked for 4 months. I was actually able to perform my job. And so with the ubiquity of 5G and IoT, it'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on that. But one thing you mentioned is give us your favorite application of IoT. And I wonder if you could just tell us a bit about that.
Sure. Yeah. So, of course, IoT and 5G, you know, I sort of grabbed them part of almost of big data, because these are the technologies, especially IoT, that creates, you know, the massive flood of data that is coming our way. But certainly, you know, Internet of Things is a fantastic group of technologies, you could almost call it. And together with 5G, I think that combination has, especially for enterprises, where we will see many enterprise networks, enterprise 5G networks, really enable, you know, factories to do basically really great things. And one of the things that, of the more complex IoT application that I find very interesting is that one of dark factories, or also called lights out factories, which basically are factories that are so automated where they have robots in place in basically every process of whatever they are manufacturing, that they hardly need any people to run the entire factory. We saw a large amount of dark factories appear at the start of COVID-19, especially in China, because they recognize that, you know, if you don't need any people, you can continue to produce whatever you're producing. For me, I think the advantage of these kind of lights out factories are that you, as an organization, you can be much more effective and efficient. And we see these lights out factories happening all over the world, especially also here in the Netherlands. You know, I read a story the other day about Philips, that they are producing their electric razors, you know, with, I think, about over 100 robots. And there are only 9 human quality assurance employees who oversee the entire manufacturing process. So instead of having dozens of employees running a manufacturing process, you can do with less than 10 and run an entire factory. Some factories you can even run just with your iPad, for that matter. So I think that's a fantastic example to see of how you can apply IoT in very complex environments and have enormous benefits out of it.
You know, I actually saw a video recently that highlighted a automated picker robot. So this robot flies along the shelves in a factory and picks items off the shelf for distribution and sale. And have you seen anything like that in person?
I've seen the same video, and actually I use it in my presentations and in my keynotes, because it's a fantastic example of how fast technology is going, and that you have these robots now that they can actually crawl up, you know, up the shelves and pick automatically and autonomously what you want and what you need, and deliver to you. So I think that's a fantastic example of how fast technologies are going, especially when you see various technologies, in this case robotics and AI and IoT, converging with each other, then all of a sudden you have these really fantastic new opportunities arising.
Absolutely. And, you know, one other industry that has my interest in particular is insurance and its use of IoT. And, you know, specifically, things are changing in terms of policies, particularly property and casualty. So IoT for policy adjustment on the fly. Right. So somebody, somebody may be about to skydive, right? So they want to go hit their mobile app and get a special policy for the moment, things like that. But there are other IoT specific things emerging in this space, wearables in particular. I wonder if you could speak to wearables just a little bit.
Yeah, so we've seen wearables already for quite a long time, but especially with, you know, again, the technology improving and also becoming, you know, smaller, and we have now all kinds of smart watches that we can use that can monitor all kinds of aspects of our body, but also other IoT devices that we can use in cars or in our homes, etc. We can use the data from the sensors basically to link them up to for example, insurance policy. And we've seen already for a couple of years now that car insurance companies use this to monitor, of course, with consent, how people are driving. And if they are driving correctly, they will receive a lower insurance premium, which I think is an interesting aspect of rewarding good behavior with a lower price to pay for your insurance. And then, of course, you can do for all kinds of ways in terms of, as I said, you know, if you are leading a healthy life, or if you have connected cameras in your home for home insurance, etc. Of course, privacy is a very, very, very important aspect here, but the opportunities are enormous if you can think of a way to reduce the insurance policies for customers and at the same time reward good behavior.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that stands out to me with insurance is that they find themselves, the insurance industry, in a very new and interesting relationship with their customers, and that of being sort of the angel on their shoulder, if you will, such that they, insurance companies, can respond to the data that is being shed, if you will, by people, and be the angel on their shoulder, right, to encourage them to healthier habits.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think that there's also a risk here, and I always want to stress it as well, that when you have a lot of data at hand, you know, this gives great opportunities, but also comes with great responsibilities. So you know, this angel on the shoulder that should stay an angel and should become not something else. Where you know, if they have so much data at hand that they can correctly predict their risks, and of course, an insurance is also has some. We should not avoid that people who cannot wear or cannot afford wearables, that they have to pay a higher premium. So there's a very thin balance here, but you know, the opportunities are enormous for insurance companies. But we should also be careful that, you know, it's a thin line that they have to thread, and I think that should be, they should be aware of that as well.
That's a great point, that we can be interested in a given technology for technology's sake, but the real truth of the matter is that there are ethics behind them, and that's a point well made.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And ethics is the more, and I'll point it out a little bit later as well when we talk about AI. But the you know, ethics are becoming more and more important. And fortunately, we see this also happening in the world, that you know, ethics is getting a more prominent place also at the boardroom to discuss this. Because without ethics, you know, you can't use technology for a way that's beneficial to your customers. And that's in the end, you know, we do it for our customers, and we should create products and services that tend to benefit your customers.
Absolutely. So one of the things we mentioned at the beginning is something I'd like to turn to, and that's virtual reality. And you mentioned that you have not been on the speaker circuit because there isn't one right now. But I believe you told me in an earlier conversation that you have a virtual reality solution to this problem. So I wonder if you could tell us about that.
Yes, I'm happy to do so. I'm actually very proud of coming up with this innovation, so to say, because I speak about digital transformation, and I always tell organizations that you should not only do digital, but you should be digital. And when I was faced with, you know, the start of COVID-19 last year, that all of a sudden I couldn't travel anymore, and I couldn't give my keynotes as I used to do all around the world, I had to reinvent myself. So what better thing to do is to practice what you preach and to become digital yourself. So that's what I did. So I created a concept called the digital speaker, and that's basically really, you know, I have become digital now, and you can book me now as an avatar, as a hologram, or a combination of the two, where my avatar appears as a hologram on stage, and you know, the people online will then see the avatar. The interesting thing about becoming digital yourself is, as I mentioned earlier, you know, it all of a sudden opens up a ton of new opportunities. So all of a sudden now I can speak, you know, at the same time at multiple locations around the world. I can speak at any location in the world, or off this world, on the moon or Mars or whatever. I can speak in any language. I can speak Mandarin. I can speak Arabic, Hindi, German, French, English, whatever. All of a sudden, you know, this becomes possible when you become digital. So, the digital speaker has also launched a tech journal, which is called The Tech Journal. Here, my digital speaker, which is basically my digital twin, covers the digital world from inside the digital world. I try to help organizations with, you know, what are the latest technologies happening and how are they impacting organizations. But it's not me, it's my digital twin who is hosting the show.
That's pretty amazing, actually. And it's cool to hear that you're having success with it, because I know that that's a relatively, it's a technology that's been around for quite a while, but only recently are we able to take advantage of it in ways that are meaningful. You know, it's nice that you're able to do that.
When it comes to virtual reality or even augmented reality, we are really at the starting point now. And for years, the technology wasn't good enough. And now we see finally that the headsets of VR headset also, but also AR headsets have improved to such an extent that they are comfortable to use. The computing power is good enough. And all of a sudden we can start to do really, really cool things. And if I can make that little bridge, the one that was recently released by Microsoft really, really impressed me.
You know, I'll mention that tech, and that's Microsoft Mesh. And that was announced at a recent conference called Ignite. And it's an augmented reality technology. And there were a lot of mixed reality announcements that came out of Microsoft Ignite. But I'll say that Mesh was really the poster child. It was sort of the onstage highlight. And it enables presence and shared experiences on any device. That's what makes it kind of unique. So what I mean by that is, sure, there are immersive experiences for virtual meetings and other interactions using 2D, 3D content, and for holographic experiences too, being an avatar like you are in your show or in your speaking events. But what's really neat about this is that while that Mesh works on HoloLens 2 and VR headsets, it also targets mobile phones, tablets, PCs, using any Mesh-enabled application. So that's why it's a little bit different, because some people can be in a VR experience that's very immersive, and others can still communicate and interact. So that's the deal on Microsoft Mesh.
Yeah, I saw the video the other day, and it really impressed me. And I think it shows the potential that VR and AR has. And it's certainly one direction that I want to take the digital speaker and the tech journal towards, be at the location of someone giving a presentation, but in completely digital form. So I think we are really at the start of VR and AR, and there's a lot to explore in the coming decade, I think.
It's really exciting. You know, we've sort of talked about some of the here and now technologies that are being transformative in industry, but now let's switch to thinking about sort of the cusp of innovation, the future of some tech that maybe it's just burgeoning right now. And I wonder if you could share, maybe pick a technology that's point of mind for you as we look ahead to future innovation and opportunity.
Well, there's so many that are coming our way. But if I have to pick one, it's certainly quantum computing. I think the impact that quantum computing can have on our society will be mind-blowing. And especially when then quantum computing is going to converge with the already existing technologies such as artificial intelligence or big data, we'll see so many new opportunities arising and giving us the opportunity to answer and solve some of the major challenges that we face as a species. So I'm super excited about quantum computing and when it's when we have the first home quantum computer available in the market, although I think it will take a while before we reach that stage.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely a burgeoning technology, if you will, just starting to ramp up. But even so, I'll mention that Azure has some quantum tooling and experiences that people can experience today. So Azure Quantum is sort of an open ecosystem of quantum tech from Microsoft Research and partners that enable quantum computing. So to go along with the fact that we have this Azure Quantum service, we have it what is typically known as an SDK, but the Quantum Development Kit, or QDK. So that's a set of tools to build, debug, and optimize quantum apps and algorithms. You can get that today. And there's an implementation of a specific quantum-focused language that we're calling Q#. And that comes with the development kit or with the quantum development kit that you can download. Interestingly, you can integrate that with Visual Studio, Visual Studio Code, and even Jupyter Notebooks. Microsoft's definitely playing in this quantum space, and you're absolutely right. The potential there is almost boundless.
I think, you know, it's great that to see that Microsoft is working on making quantum computing available for the masses, for a larger market. Because especially, when we talk about quantum computing, apart from the development of the quantum computer itself, which is a massive challenge, once we have a workable quantum computing, then we still need also different ways of operating the quantum computing. Quantum algorithms are different from the standard algorithms that we are used to, where a classical algorithm is just a sequence of instructions that are followed up by a classical computer, and a quantum algorithm is almost a step-by-step procedures of what the quantum computer needs to do to perform a certain action. And I think, a quantum algorithm is able to really benefit from the characteristics such as quantum superposition or quantum entanglement. And that requires, that offers, of course, a lot of new opportunities if we are able to build these advanced quantum algorithms. So from that perspective, it's good to see that Microsoft is working on that. But I think there's also a lot of work to be done on quantum computing. There's also a lot of work to be done on outside the quantum world once we have a quantum computing, because there are many implications, of course, also for security. Once we have reached a post quantum world where quantum computers are the norm and our existing day-to-day cryptography doesn't really work anymore. So that's something to be, these new technologies, they come with great opportunities, but they come also with great responsibilities. And we need to make sure how to ensure our security is in place once quantum computers are the norm.
That's a really great point. And I want to turn our conversation just a little bit, because you mentioned earlier that you're a member of a group there in the Netherlands that focuses on tokens and their use in various scenarios, I assume. And you also mentioned tokenomics in your online discourse and articles that you've written, et cetera. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about what tokenomics is.
Sure. So what we do is it's called the Two Tokens Foundation, and here in the Netherlands, we try to help organizations understanding tokenomics, understanding tokenization, and we help them with use cases, where they explore new opportunities of how you can use this technology. So if you look at tokens, a token is basically a representation of an asset on a blockchain. That's the most broad explanation that you can give. And tokenomics is then the study of this emerging field, of the design of tokens and their related digital assets, using economic incentives, game theory, cryptography, and computer science. So it really brings together everything when it comes to how we can use tokens. It's about the practice and tools to analyze, design, and verify tokenized ecosystems. And I think, again, this is also a technology that's really at the starting point. Where blockchain has been around for about a bit over a decade now. Everyone knows Bitcoin. Everyone knows Ethereum. But now we see more technologies, more networks, more decentralized networks, more tokens appear. A lot of people probably have heard about NFTs now, since Beeple's sale of almost $70 million for his master artwork. So it has really become into the news now. And for me, I'm a big fan of tokens, of blockchain technology. I think it's a fundamental technology that really will change how our society runs, especially because tokens have so many advantages. We have, of course, security tokens. We have currency tokens such as Bitcoin, but also the digital yuan or the digital dollar coming in the future, as well as utility tokens, which are sort of a token that is used as a means to an end within a certain network. These tokens, the benefit of what they have is that they are programmable. So we can all of a sudden embed rules and governance with the token when we do something. And we saw that perfectly with the non-fungible tokens, NFTs, that were used for the sale of artwork, which is so much in the news at the moment, where you can link ownership to a token and you can store it on the blockchain. And if you own that token, then you're also the owner of the associated artwork or asset or whatever is linked to that.
That's a fascinating topic and probably the simplest and most easy to follow explanation of NFTs I've heard. So I really appreciate that. NFTs are, you're right, they're really popular in media, but it seems like nobody really understands what these things are yet.
Well, it's so new and you know, non-fungible tokens, you know, what does that mean? You know, it means that you have a token that is, you know, you can only have one of it. And therefore, it's very useful to be linked to an asset. I think one of the most promises of tokenization is the big effect it will have for our economy. And let me explain that, because what we'll see happening is if you want to sell, if you're an investor, you want to sell a $100 million building in New York. That process generally would take 3 months, 6 months. You know, I'm not sure how long these processes take in New York, but generally I can imagine it take quite a while. If you tokenize that building, you can sell that building on the secondary market within an instant. So all of a sudden, what this means, if we are able to tokenize all these illiquid assets, we can turn them into liquid assets. And that would mean we can free up trillions and trillions of dollars, which are currently fixed in illiquid assets. All of a sudden, they become liquid, and that will have such a massive impact on our economy. And I'm very curious to see when, first of all, we'll see a mass adoption of this, because it's still very much in the fringes happening at the moment. And secondly, what will be the impact? You know, when we have all of a sudden trillions of dollars of liquidity in the market.
That's fascinating, and it's a compelling picture that you're painting there. And I can see how that can fundamentally change an economy. That's amazing. We're getting down to the near end of our conversation. Before we sign off, I want to recognize your books. And I've done some research on these. I'll confess to not having read them
<That's okay. laughs>
all the way, but I can tell you that people are big fans of your work. So I want to just mention some of these. Think Bigger. Developing a successful big data strategy for your business, that I assume is sort of democratization of big data. Is that right?
Yeah, the book was written in 2014. So from that perspective, you know, it was really at the start when big data sort of became a hype in the market, and it really explains how you can use a data strategy and how you can use data for the benefit of your organization.
Okay. And then you were co-author of Blockchain, Transforming Your Business in Our World. That one, I think, is pretty self-evident for listeners. And then there is also The Organization of Tomorrow, right, which discusses how AI, in particular blockchain and big data, turn every business into a data organization. So as for that, in your last book, The Organization of Tomorrow, I had to mention that our own Satya Nadella once said that every company is a software company. You're talking about every company being a data organization. And along with that, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about the democratization of AI in particular. What's happening there, maybe good and bad?
Yeah, so I think what we see happening at the moment is that AI is really, well, you could almost say infiltrating every part of our society at the moment, where as well as our organizations, and it has also become so much easier to start using AI to automate your own work. Now we see this whole movement of low code or no code, where you can use a robotic process automation RPA to basically automate your own job, you know, and you don't need to be a developer anymore to be able to do so. So it has really become plug and play. And of course, this doesn't mean that you can build, you know, advanced algorithms with no code or low code. Obviously, you need a lot of data, you need a lot of developers and a lot of hard work to do so, but it has become, you know, a lot easier, also a lot cheaper to do so. Using a chatbot with a relatively little investment in time, money, and energy, you can create a chatbot that is that can automate at least the first line of calls that come into your call center and already benefit from it. So I think what we see happening here is that artificial intelligence is really having a massive impact on organizations, and of course we live in a capitalist world. So if organizations can automate their processes, they will do that to make it more effective and efficient. And you see that it has become easier to implement and to embed AI within your organization. And that has, of course, as you mentioned, good points and bad points. And especially with AI, when we develop AI, there are so many examples in the world around already that AI was biased for whatever reason. And that's, of course, a very natural thing to happen because we develop these algorithms with we train them with biased data, and they are created by biased developers. So that's why it's so important to try to get rid of this bias, which is very, very challenging, but also very important to do so. If we are going to live in a world where machines and humans are collaborating everywhere, we need to make sure that the algorithms and the AI are doing so in as much as unbiased way as possible.
Absolutely. And if listeners haven't done a little bit of reading about bias in AI, it's definitely worth your time. Bias in AI is definitely real. And, it's just one of those things that, as Mark points out, we need to guard against. Right? One thing I'll mention, too, in previous conversation, you told me about a digital transformation framework that you have for organizations to have a path to become a digital first organization. I wonder if you could tell us about that, your digital transformation framework.
Sure, happy to do so. And this the digital transformation framework is in my last book, it's basically a result from my PhD, which I did at the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia, where I looked into how organizations change due to these new technologies, due to big data, blockchain, and artificial intelligence. And since dissertations are generally very dry to read, I decided to make it a bit easier to read and turn it into a management book, and there. In this book, I added my digital transformation framework, which I call the D square plus A square model. Why is it D square plus A square? Very simple, because there are four steps, and these steps are datafy, distribute, analyze, and automate. It basically means that if you want to start with digital transformation within your organization, of course, you can't start by digitally transforming your entire business from the start. And you need to start small in certain areas. And when you do so, if you follow these four steps of first datafying the processes, datafying the customer touch points among the within that process that you want to digitally transform, you can start to create the data that you need. Because without data, you can't do any analysis, you can't do any create any insights. So the datafication is the first step. Once you have the data, it's time to distribute the data. And you can distribute the data either in the cloud, whether this is a hybrid cloud or on-premises cloud or completely in the cloud, it doesn't really matter. But when you use the cloud, it's predominantly used for internal processes, internal data, etc. Or you can use blockchain if you want to collaborate with your industry peers and you want to create a more efficient and effective supply chain, for example. Once you have datafied your processes, you created the data, you distributed the data using the cloud or blockchain, you can then start to analyze the data using descriptive, predictive, and prescriptive analytics. And I always refer to these as descriptive analytics or BI as being looking in the rearview mirror of your car. It helps you to see what has happened from 1 second ago to 10 years ago. But if you drive by only looking into your rearview mirror, you're certainly going to crash. Therefore, you need predictive analytics, which helps you to make predictions of what's going to happen based on all the historical data that you have. And you can compare that to your car's navigation system that gives you the most optimal route to your destination, but you still need to drive yourself. And then you have prescriptive analytics, which is the final phase of understanding your business, which you can best compare to a self-driving car driving you autonomously to your destination. It not only creates predictions, creates scenarios, but then also makes the decisions and moves ahead autonomously. Then the fourth step and the final step is to automate your processes and your customer touch points. And you can do this automation with AI or with smart contracts run on a blockchain. And if you follow these steps of datafying, distributing, analyzing, automating, I believe that you can have a clear path of how to digitally transform basically any process within your organization.
That's great. And something that you've obviously given a lot of thought to, and it makes sense, those sort of sequential steps of digital transformation. That makes it a lot more approachable for folks.
Well, I hope so, because digital transformation is difficult. I believe over 70% of the organizations, they fail in their digital transformation program. And there are, of course, multiple reasons for that. But I think one of the most important reasons for that is a not good enough understanding of technology. And more importantly, having a thorough understanding across the entire organization of these technologies. And having these four steps can help understand what technology do you need for what step, and what does this technology mean for your organization at what, in which process? And that will help you then to digitally transform your organization.
Great. Thanks for that. As we're winding down here, I just want to mention that we're going to have a lot of links this week in our show notes, particularly around you and your business. So people will be able to follow you, thedigitalspeaker.com, obviously, and your online presence. So in addition, your company Dataflock, right? Which we didn't even talk about.
we talked about it briefly. As I mentioned, it is a content platform for people to learn more about these technologies. And there are a couple hundred authors from around the world on there who share their insights, their knowledge on these topics to help organizations understand digital transformation and digital technologies.
Great. Then the last thing I'll mention is that we'll obviously have some Microsoft links up there to technologies that we mentioned in the show, like Quantum and Mesh. So with that, I just want to say what a pleasure it was to have you on the show. And thanks so much for making the time.
Well, it's been a pleasure, David. Thanks for having me on the show.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Azure for Executives podcast. We love hearing from you. And if you have suggestions for topics, questions about issues discussed on the show, or other feedback, contact the show host, David Starr, or Paul Marr, through the social media links included in the show notes for each episode. We look forward to hearing from you.